Dr. Google can't fix your knee. The Joint Relief Institute can. Fast joint pain relief, covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Hello again, Orion Samuelson here, Dateline Friday, December 18, as we come to the end of a market week that had all sorts of things happening. The first interest rate hike by the Federal Reserve in 10 years. And then on this Friday, a very busy day, the stock market didn't perform all that well, but we did get a bill in Washington that will keep the government going for the next 9 months into the new year. But more importantly, I think, for the world of agriculture, there is an item in that bill that the president has signed that will probably put an end to the possibility of retaliation by Canada and Mexico because of COOL, because Congress today passed a broad 2016 spending package that included the repeal of a meat labeling law in order to avoid more than $1 billion in trade retaliation by Mexico and Canada. And the president has already signed the omnibus spending bill. And that's important to the agricultural industry and our export business because the COOL problem, country of origin labeling, has been a problem ever since it went into law. U.S. trade groups supported scrapping the country of origin labeling rule on beef, pork, and poultry after the World Trade Organization ruled that they discriminated against imported meat. Ron Prestage of South Carolina, who is a pork producer and president of the National Pork Producers Council, praised lawmakers for repealing COOL. If they had not, it would have been devastating to me and other pork producers, said Ron. The policy requires labeling on meat that states where livestock animals are born, raised, and slaughtered, and the way they move back and forth across the borders, particularly between Mexico and the U.S. and Canada in the U.S., made that a big problem. However, the law was popular with American consumers for giving greater transparency to their food purchase. It was included in the 2002 Farm Bill. And in 2013, even as Canada and Mexico had filed objections to the law, we still continued with the law in place, and it led, finally, to the WTO saying we're wrong again and again, and that said that Canada and Mexico would retaliate. Well, hopefully they have fixed it all. And we will now be able to continue our export business, particularly in beef, pork, and poultry, without retaliation from Canada and Mexico. Canada, once again, our number one trading partner in agricultural products. Very important that we keep Canada and Mexico happy. So that's a big event, and it happened today. And, of course, earlier in the week, we saw the Federal Reserve, after talking about it, I think, for the last 2 or 3 years, finally decided they would raise the interest rate by a quarter point. And more importantly, perhaps, the comments by Fed Chair Janet Yellen that they would not be in a hurry or on schedule to raise interest rates every 3 months or every 6 months or whatever. They would take that step rather slowly. So we got the reaction on Wednesday after the announcement of a sharply higher stock market. And then for the past 2 days, we have sold off the stock market, and it has sold off sharply. We ended the week, for example, with the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 367 points for the day. It ended at 17,128. The S&P 500 dropped 36 points today, and that puts it at 2,005 at the end of the week. The NASDAQ Composite, 49.23 on the close, dropping below the 5,000 mark again, down 79 points for the day. And our worrying picked up after the Fed made the announcement, and so that volatility index, VIX, at the CBOE is again above 20. It's a 2060, and that's a gain of 1 2/3 points for the week, or for the day. Now, taking a look at weekly changes on Wall Street for the week, the Dow down 0.8%. The S&P 500 fell 0.3%, and the NASDAQ lost 0.2% for the week. The Dow and the S&P 500 registered the biggest two-day percentage loss since September 1st. And it happened around the world, too. Global stock markets falling sharply today. Part of the reason, slumping oil prices that continued to raise concerns about slower growth. Trading in crude oil in the bond market volatile today, while stock investors were skittish in the wake of the euphoria that followed the Fed's interest rate increase on Wednesday. Wall Street really sold off into the close, and the sell-off appeared tied to lower oil prices and the Fed's move, and not because of options expiration, because today was the quadruple action that sometimes leads to greater volatility. But that oil market, while it's good when we go to the gasoline station to fill the gas tank, it is not all that good with the world economy. Oil prices fell about 0.5% today. One of the reasons for that, the U.S. oil rig count unexpectedly rose for the first time in 5 weeks. And that pressures a market that's already at 7-year lows. Global oil benchmark Brent and U.S. crude's West Texas Intermediate Future settled down for a third straight week. With 2 weeks to the year end, both were slated to finish 2015 down about 35% on a route that's driven by oversupplies of oil in the world. Despite the severity of that decline, though, there was a surprise today. Data from oil services company Baker Hughes showed that U.S. energy firms added to the number of oil rigs in operation this week, and that would indicate yet another increase in oil production. The closely watched report showed 17 new oil rigs that brought the total to 541, and one oil trader in New York said the rig count increase was a bit of a surprise. I don't think it was a coincidence that the market fell after the report. And the West Texas crude hit $34.29 a barrel. That's the lowest since February of 2009 after the release of that report. It settled the day down 22 cents at $34.73. And Brent finished today's session down 18 cents at $36.88. So the oil price, while it's, yes, good for energy purchasers anytime we go to the pump, not helping the overall world economy that much. As a matter of fact, today Citigroup made the announcement it plans to cut at least 2,000 jobs starting next month as the lender restructures its businesses. A substantial portion of the layoffs will be in middle or back office positions. Citigroup declined to comment, but the bank, due to report fourth quarter earnings on January 15th, had 239,000 employees as of the end of September. And Citigroup said this month it would take a $300 million repositioning change in the quarter to resize infrastructure and capacity throughout its business. Another business note today, there may be more planes in the sky than FedEx and UPS and DHL. Amazon.com negotiating to lease 20 Boeing 767 jets to start its own air delivery service next month, seeking to avoid delays from third-party carriers, that according to a story today in the Seattle Times. Amazon has approached several cargo aircraft lessors to line up the planes, and the source of that information, a senior aircraft leasing company executive familiar with the matter. So could be more cargo planes in the air. And, you know, as I look back in 1970, there was no industry doing what FedEx and UPS and the other cargo delivering airplane groups are doing today. So talk about establishing a new business and then watching it grow tremendously, which it certainly has since the 1970s. President Obama, beginning his Christmas vacation, heading for Hawaii, said he was very pleased with the action in Congress today dealing with the bill that will keep the government in operation. And, as I said, part of that bill was the straightening out of the language of country of origin labeling. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack had this to say, and I quote, "The omnibus bill repealed the country of origin labeling requirements for muscle cuts of beef and pork and ground beef and pork. Effective immediately, USDA is not enforcing the cool requirements for muscle cut and ground beef and pork outlined in the January 2009 and May 2013 final rules." I was in Washington on Thursday this week for the annual year-end interview with the Secretary of Agriculture. And that was one of the questions I did ask Secretary Vilsack, what he thought about the cool situation and would Congress take action to avoid retaliation. He looked at me, smiled, and he said, "I think it will happen." And then today, shortly before we got the signing of the bill, Canada's agriculture minister said beef and pork trade with the U.S. will be restored quite shortly, to put it in the words of the Canadian ag minister. So apparently the work that was being done behind the scenes, I asked the secretary if he had talked personally to the ag minister of Canada. He said yes, and then he added, "And I've also talked to the ag minister of Mexico, and we will get this solved." Well, Congress solved it today. There's more to come. We're going to take a look at this cattle market and visit with Dennis Smith of Archer Financial Services. So stay with us when we continue on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Dennis Smith of Archer Financial Services joins us this week to discuss markets, particularly livestock, because that is his expertise. And I tell you what, Dennis, the hog market has had its challenges, but I've had a lot of cattlemen calling me saying, "When is this going to end?" Explain to me what we have seen for the last 2 or 3 months in the cattle industry.
Well, we've seen a big mess with the cattle market working lower under the weight of a poor demand situation. oriented. It just appears to me that we've had a beef market that's just not been priced competitively with pork and with poultry. So we've seen a market searching for demand and, quite frankly, losing market share of the consumer dollar, both domestically as well as on the export front.
Now, I've heard some people, Dennis, say, well, it's turkey time between Thanksgiving and Christmas. And we go to turkey and we begin to ignore meats like beef and pork. Is that a factor?
That is a factor, but typically right after Thanksgiving, you have a pretty good surge in beef demand for food service type demand for high-end restaurant business during the holidays. Even fast food business during the holidays is typically quite good. But we did not experience any sort of good demand strength in the beef cutout values here since Thanksgiving.
And let's talk pork for a moment, and then we'll come back to this cattle industry. But we saw pork lean hog futures take some violent moves as well.
Yeah, and we've been quite disappointed with the performance of the hog market, typically looking for rising prices here in the face of peaking hog numbers and supply and hopefully improving demand for a very inexpensive pork product. But we've not seen that develop, and partly because hog numbers, hog slaughter, typically has not peaked out and has not started dropping off. The latest hog and pig report indicated we should be experiencing fewer numbers. It's not happened, as of this day. So we're looking at a record large hog slaughter here in this current trade week.
Did PEDV play any role in what we've seen happen now in the pork industry?
Well, it's helped us. We've had a full recovery from the PED virus, so we are looking at, substantially higher production this fall and this winter than what we experienced a year ago. Amazingly, the pork producers have really seemingly won the battle with the PED virus. So that, if anything, has been a negative influence on prices here over the last 2 or 3 months.
And I would guess the relatively warm fall and winter is a factor.
It has been a factor. It's been a beautiful fall and early winter for raising hogs and for feed conversion. Of course, the new crop corn into the ration, and it's a plentiful corn supply with a low historically corn price, which indicates a little bit of overfeeding. Hog weights are up slightly, so all of those things combined has put more pork into the pipeline than what we expected.
And earlier this month, the first 2 weeks of the month, Dennis, I spoke at 7 farm management marketing outlook meetings in Minnesota, close to the Iowa border. And I had people there telling me that builders of pork feeding facilities are busy as can be. Does that mean we are in an expansion that is maybe bigger than expected?
Well, that would be larger than expected, because we have kind of thought that the expansion had been stifled by, some disappointing hog prices here this fall. Latest hog and pig report seemed to indicate caution by the industry, and we were thinking that caution prevailed here over the last 3 months. So that is actually news to me and would be a little bit negative, in fact, possibly quite a bit negative, if something like that shows up on the upcoming hog and pig report.
Basically came from owner of a construction company that makes slats for the confinement pork feeding industry. And he normally produces 600 of those a day, and he said that he had to increase his production up to 1,100 a day to meet the demand. So I guess it's something we'll keep an eye on. Now, let's take a look at export demand in the pork industry. What's happening there?
Well, we've seen improving exports, but overall it's also somewhat of a disappointment. We have been counting on vastly increased business with China, and it, quite frankly, is just not developed. Now, recent pork exports were up 7%. That was your October trade data, up 7% versus October of last year. But for the period of January through October, pork business to China is down about 25% versus a year ago. So we are losing market share to Europe, the European community, and Orion. That's probably mostly due to the currencies, with the strong dollar and the sharply lower European currency. We've just plain flat out lost market share.
Do you see any impact of the first increase in rates by the Fed in 10 years as far as the livestock industry is concerned? Will it have an impact?
It will if the U.S. dollar continues to work higher, and that's one of the perils, I think. It's one thing the Federal Reserve, I believe, is concerned about. If they start raising interest rates, if the U.S. dollar continues to strengthen, that will put our exports of agricultural commodities, including beef and pork, into the stiff headwind, and certainly be a negative influence.
So going back to the cattle industry and the volatility we've seen there with up or down limit moves, more than up limit moves, but who's going to get hurt the worst in the cattle industry?
Well, I think it's the feedlot guy, the producer that's finishing out cattle, more so than the cow-calf guy, although feeder cattle prices are down substantially as well. But I think the historically high feeder cattle prices we've experienced all year has driven break-even prices for the fed cattle too high, and drastically too high given the downturn in the cash steer market. So your feedlot enterprises, your producers, both small and large, that are finishing cattle have sustained tremendous losses this year, if not record losses.
And we saw a cash cattle market this week drop below $120 in some of the plains areas. So the question I get asked most often, Dennis, is, when are we going to hit bottom on this cattle market?
We are hopeful, Orion, that maybe we are experiencing that as we speak, with this week's cash trade as low as 117 in the southern plains. It's possible you might see this be the low water mark in the cash steer market. The positive that we have, two things. Beef imports are starting to decline rather dramatically. And cattle weights, due to the muddy feedlot conditions, are actually starting to drop for the first time in months. So this is a couple of positives that we're starting to focus upon.
We have seen unusually heavier weights in cattle that are being marketed this year?
Yes, it's been a record heavyweight situation, both steer weights and heifer weights. And it's sort of been engineered by the beef packer. In times of tighter supply and an industry of overcapacity on the slaughter abilities, they desire as large a carcass as possible. So that has encouraged the overfeeding of cattle.
And a lot of cattlemen still concerned about the fact that we have to import beef from Australia and some other markets. But as has been said very often, if it doesn't go both ways, it's not trade.
Yeah, that's right. It's a free market, which is really what you want to see. Although we are expecting imports from Australia to begin to drop off rather substantially as they are experiencing a downturn in beef production and, in fact, record high beef prices right now.
What's happening to beef demand in Japan? You know, I remember, I think it was 86 or 87, being included in a group that went to Tokyo with Clayton Yeider, who later became Secretary of Agriculture, but at that point was Special Trade Representative. And it was really that meeting, I think, that began to open the Japanese market to U.S. beef. And once they got it, they loved it. Do they still love American beef in Japan?
They do. They, I believe, right now rank number two as far as a beef customer, second only to Mexico. Mm-hmm. They continue to eat large amounts of beef, although the price level has certainly rationed demand in Japan. you know, and I'm talking about the record high prices of the wholesale beef that they've experienced over the last several months. So beef, I should say beef exports to Japan would certainly begin to improve if we continue to see lower prices offered.
Final question, and this one asks for the crystal ball, looking ahead to 2016. Any feelings yet on what prices will do for hogs and cattle?
Well, we look for challenges. Looks like maybe we could see an upward correction early next year in live cattle and feeder cattle. But I think the challenges of high prices and soft demand for beef versus pork will continue to keep a downtrend intact. Hog futures and hog prices need to see increased exports, primarily to China, but all of our other customers. At this point, expansion is the wild card, and if the industry is very conservative, you could see an uptrend develop in hog prices.
Dennis Smith of Archer Financial Services, a man we talked to many times throughout the year because of his knowledge of what's happening in the cattle and hog industries. There's more to come, and we hope you'll stay with us here on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Keep in mind that next week will be a short holiday trading week because all markets will close at noon Chicago time on Thursday, Christmas Eve day, and then all markets will be closed, of course, for the full day on Christmas Day, Friday. So that means a 3.5-day trading week ahead of us and probably a lighter than normal population on the trading floor, because my guess is a lot of the traders are going to make it a full week's vacation and probably won't be on the trading floor next week. So let's see where we're going to start the week in the grain market. And some weather worries came into the market this week because of dry weather in Brazil. It's probably the first of several weather scares we will get during the next 2 or 3 months, but it was enough to send the soybean market higher. Today, the January soybean contract gained 16.25 cents. So Monday, the market for soybeans will start at 8.92¼ a bushel. Corn gained just 0.5 cent today. It gained a lot more early in the session and then backed away from early highs. So we'll start the corn trade Monday in the March contract at 374.5 a bushel. Growers I talked to would love to see soybeans back up to the $10 mark and corn certainly at the $4, but I'm not finding many analysts who tend to agree with that wish. The March wheat contract will start the week at 486.75 after dropping 2.75 cents. In today's trade. Now, the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, and of course we talked a lot about the cattle market with Dennis Smith, but today I would guess short covering came into the market, some anticipation ahead of the cattle on feed report, and we saw something we haven't seen for a while in the cattle market, limit up moves in both live cattle futures and in feeder cattle futures. As a matter of fact, on my sheet, I show live cattle futures for December, February, April, and June all up the $3 per hundredweight limit for the day. So that put the December contract at $120.15. It put the February cattle contract at $125.52. And in the feeder cattle market, well, I'm looking at January, March, and April, all up the $4.50 per hundredweight daily trading limit. That puts January feeder cattle at $148.75 a hundredweight, and April feeder cattle at $148.67. Even lean hogs have picked up a little strength today. The February lean hog contract gained 87 cents a hundredweight. That means Monday we'll start trading at 56.65. Well, that's our time for this week. As always, thank you for joining us for our discussion of the markets. And remember, the markets are sponsored by the CME Group.